Okay, so question. Do you ever think in the entire history of humankind that there has ever been a single 24-hour period during which there was not a single act of violence somewhere on Earth? Everybody's shaking their head. No, there's certainly no way that that ever has been the case. Ever since there were more than two people on the earth. And we know that because the very first story in our holy scriptures about humanity, once there were more than two people, is about a murder. Cain killed his brother Abel. And within the United States, I would bet there is probably not a single 60-second period in which there's not a single act of violence somewhere in the United States. On average, 327 people each day are shot. Not necessarily killed, but they're shot by a gun. 327 people a day in the United States. And that's just guns. Now, I understand the impulses. I'm a child of my culture. Even when I was a scrawny little guy growing up, I would get into physical fights. And that was even before joining the boxing team in second grade. And I am still way too quick to yell angry words or bad names at people that I'm upset with, especially when I'm driving or at sporting events. All too often, violence feels like the quickest, easiest way to end disagreements. Based on the history of our world, our country, our culture, violence has been one of the most popular ways that people have gotten what they wanted. But it is not the way of Christ. In our story this morning, Jesus shows us a better way. A better way to live in relationship with others. Early in Matthew's gospel, like I was saying earlier, Matthew records Jesus teaching his followers not only to resist the way of violence, but even to actively choose the way of love and sacrifice for others. And here in our text for today, we see Jesus living out what he taught. In a world of violence, Jesus shows us a better way to live, as well as teaches it. But we have to be honest and acknowledge that one of the messages that comes through frequently in this story is that the way that Jesus chooses to live is not easy. Rather, it is excruciatingly painful. This moment, this whole moment recorded, occurs because one of Jesus' best friends betrays him. Matthew emphasizes that in several ways. In that opening line, verse 47, while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. Literally in the Greek, there's a little word, behold, in there, idu. So it's, while he was speaking, Jesus was speaking, look, Judas. Matthew is pointing out who this is. And in fact, he makes the intimacy of their relationship even more clear, even clearer with what follows. Judas, one of the 12. One of the 12. Judas is one of the tiny circle of men who shared all of life with Jesus over the previous 3 years. And to top it off, we hear in verses 48 that he arranged a signal with the mob. The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him. And going to Jesus, Judas said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. Again, the Greek word that Matthew chooses to describe the kiss even reveals another emphatic detail. William Barclay tells it, the word used of Judas's kiss is the word for a lover's kiss and means to kiss repeatedly and fervently. It's easy for us to diminish the hurt that Jesus endures in this moment because we understand from previous readings that Jesus knew it was coming. Jesus knew that Judas was going to betray him. But we also need to remember that just minutes before this moment, they're in the Garden of Gethsemane, and Jesus is so overcome with sorrow and fear about what is going to happen that he's sobbing, and it says in one of the accounts that he literally sweat blood. His body was in such trauma. It is vital for us to remember that Jesus is a human being. And this betrayal hurt. Also, in fairness to our humanity, though, I think it's worthwhile for us to spare a moment to think about Judas. On one hand, Judas may have chosen to betray Jesus out of pure evil and selfishness. Stanley Hauerwas represents this argument. He writes, "Matthew doesn't tell us why Judas betrays Jesus. That he was given 30 pieces of silver suggests that money was not irrelevant. Indeed, in the Gospel of John, we're told that Judas was a thief. We recoil at the thought that Jesus might be betrayed for something as trivial as money, but Jesus has told us that we cannot serve God and wealth. Judas, it seems, has made his choice. Evil, the darkest evil, too often comes disguised in the insignificant." So that's one possibility. On the other hand, there may be a more complex reason Judas makes the choice he makes. I believe that William Barclay has speculations that are worth at least contemplating. He writes, "Judas may really, either from avarice or from disillusionment, have wished to see Jesus killed. Or he may have been trying to force his hand and may have wished not to see him killed, but to compel him to act." He again brings up the word that Matthew uses about the way that Judas kissed Jesus. And then he asks, why would Judas do that? The curious thing is, from the moment of that kiss, Judas vanishes from the scene in the garden, not to reappear until he is bent on suicide. He doesn't even appear as a witness at the trial of Jesus. It's far more likely, Barclay surmises, that in one stunning, blinding, staggering, searing moment, Judas saw how he had miscalculated and staggered away into a night forever broken, a forever haunted man. If this be true, at this moment, Judas entered the hell which he created for himself. For the worst kind of hell is the full realization of the terrible consequences of sin. Whatever Judas's motivation, the consequence was that an innocent man was arrested and eventually wrongly executed. This is important to note because if Jesus had wanted to resist arrest, even violently, he would have been justified. Those in the mob who came to get him are the ones who chose to come with swords and clubs. Jesus even points out that this is excessive since they could have easily picked him up, arrested him almost any day while he was literally sitting and teaching in the temple courts. He asks them, verse 55, "Am I leading a rebellion that you come to arrest me with clubs and swords?" And so, when we read that a disciple of Jesus takes a sword out and hacks off the ear of one of the holy priest's guards, it's hard to fault whoever did that. John says that it was Peter. It sounds like something Peter would do. But in the same way, I mean, the mob kind of provoked him, and Jesus is innocent. He does not deserve to be arrested. But Jesus makes his stance on violence clear. Not only do we hear in verse 52, "Put your sword back in its place, for all who draw the sword will die by the sword." Jesus adds, "Do you think I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels?" We need to pause here and think of what Jesus is saying. Jesus, in that moment, could have called down tens of thousands of these otherworldly beings, angels. Now, we don't normally think of angels being physically intimidating, and yet I just erased all the rest of my sermon. No, not all of it. Part of it. We don't normally think of.
Can you shake it?
No. I have an undo mark, and I just got it back. How about that? We don't normally think of angels as being physically intimidating, but if you think about through the history of the Hebrew First Testament, they often appear as human beings. And even maybe more significant is that in the resurrection stories, when angels do appear as angels, even one or two is enough to terrify those who see them. And Jesus is saying that he could have summoned in that moment 12 legions of them. A legion was 6,000. So he said, I could call down 80,000 of these otherworldly beings. And Jesus seems to be implying that he could have done that at any time previously, if he had wanted. But Jesus doesn't summon legions of angels. He doesn't even summon one angel. Jesus shuts down the disciple acting violently, even though the disciple's trying to defend Jesus himself. And Jesus gives all of his followers a profound warning against violence anytime. "For all who draw the sword will die by the sword." In this life-threatening moment, Jesus chooses not violence, but the way of sacrifice and love. He's been teaching his disciples that this is God's way, but here he lives it out. He adds that living this better way, even though it's far more difficult, is essentially the reason that he ever showed up here at all. We heard that in this Hebrew First Testament reading. Or actually, he says in the moment with the guards, "This has all taken place that the writings of the prophets might be fulfilled." And our Hebrew First Testament reading is one of those prophetic writings. And we hear that he was beaten, he was tortured, yet he didn't say a word. "Like a lamb taken to be slaughtered and a sheep to be sheared, he took it all in silence. Justice miscarried." This is an acknowledgement. "And he was led off. And did anyone really know what was happening? He died without a thought for his own welfare, beaten bloody for the sins of my people, for our sins. This is what Jesus came to reveal, to show the way of God. In a world of violence, Jesus showed us a better way. And fundamental to this way of life is nonviolence. Our country is literally killing itself off because of our inability to renounce violence and live a better way. Given our story this morning, violence is especially heinous when it is committed by those who claim to be followers of Christ. And even worse, in some ways, committed to supposedly defend God, defend Jesus, and what Jesus cares about. Jesus renounced all of that. The question of us, his disciples, is, will we follow this better way? Author John Howard Yoder writes, "The question put to us as we follow Jesus isn't whether we have successfully refrained from breaking any rules. Instead, we are asked whether we have been participants in that human experience, that peculiar way of living for God in the world and being used as instruments of the living God in the world, the way that the Bible calls agape, love, or at times also the cross, sacrifice." Paul gives us a beautiful illustration of what that life looks like in that Galatians passage. I like the Message version because it gets away from, this is the famous, the fruit of the Spirit is love, peace, patience, kindness. Instead, he puts it this way. What happens when we live the way God wants us to? God brings gifts into our lives, much like fruit that appears. Things like affection for others. As we read these, notice how contrary to so much of our society this is right now. Things like affection for others, exuberance about life, serenity. We develop a willingness to stick with things, a sense of compassion in the heart, and the conviction that a basic holiness permeates all things and all people. We find ourselves involved in loyal commitments, not needing to force our way in life, able to marshal and direct our energies wisely. This is not something we can legislate, essentially. Legalism is helpless in bringing this about and only gets in the way. Among those who belong to Christ, everything connected with getting our own way, including violence, and mindlessly responding to what everyone else calls necessities, it's all killed off. That's the only violence that's acceptable, is killing off our own evil ways, crucified. I mentioned before, this way of life is not easy. For Jesus, it was excruciating. In fact, at the end of our story this morning, we hear that Judas wasn't the only one who turned away from Jesus. I'm sure you all caught that in the readings, but the very last line of this is, "Then all of his disciples deserted him and fled." For Jesus, it was excruciating. And the truth is that most of us are not really that much different than the original disciples, which is why we put our hope in Jesus and not in ourselves. Janine Brown puts it like this. Matthew has portrayed Jesus as faithful and obedient to his Father throughout his story and his mission from the start. Although tempted to take a different path, Jesus stays the course to the cross. Here in Gethsemane, we see the most heart-wrenching of moments in Jesus' journey to the culmination of his mission to give his life as a ransom for many. Yet even with his death looming, Jesus remains faithful and obedient. It can help all of us to know Jesus' struggle to follow an easier path and of his own desire to avoid the cross. To overcome temptation as Jesus did is not about some superhuman ability to avoid feeling deep ambivalence toward the sacrifice involved in following God's path. Rather, it is about placing ourselves in the hands of the covenant God who cares deeply for us. In a world of violence, Jesus has shown us a better way to live. Thanks be to God. Let's all stand and sing together hymn number 454, Blessed Jesus, at Your Word.